Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, I got a special show this week because it is Thanksgiving week. I do want to mention my guys over at Golden Globus Theater. They're doing Cliffhanger this week, no matter what people are voting about. But you have to follow them on X to understand that. But yeah, can't wait to hear their thoughts on the film Cliffhanger. I remember seeing that at Ball State. At the Muncie Movie Theater at the Ball State University. But I have a very special interview that I'm going to share with you in a little bit. But first, need to raise a glass to English actor Joss Ackland, who passed away earlier this week. Credits go all the way back to the late 40s and did a slew of TV and theater into the 50s and 60s. And American audiences, they just need to know two words: diplomatic immunity, for his role as the villain in Lethal Weapon 2. But man, he did so much work. So here's some hot scrolling here at IMDb scrolling here at Film Sociology. One of the first films he did in the 1970s was he was in the Waxworks segment of the 1971 film The House That Dripped Blood. He also appeared that same year with Richard Burton in the film Villain, which I need to reconnect with on that. The Mind Snatchers from 1972, Penny Gold, England Made Me. He was in the 1973 film version of The Three Musketeers as D'Artagnan's father. The Black Windmill, Spies, The Little Prince, Royal Flash, Operation Daybreak. Was uncredited, but was in The Greek Tycoon, Silver Bears, Who Is Killing the Great Chefs of Europe, was the voice of the Black Rabbit in Watership Down. Also worked with Peter Bogdanovich on St. Jack. His voice is in the English language version of Caligula. There you go. Also appeared with Burt Reynolds in Rough Cut. Yes, he was the hippie leader, Mr. Topps, in the musical The Apple. Whew. Lady Jane, A Zed in Two Noughts. Let's see. The Sicilian, White Mischief, To Kill a Priest. Lethal Weapon 2, of course, 1989, as Rudd. The Palmero Connection, he was one of the Russians, English actors playing Russians, in The Hunt for Red October. The Sheltering Desert. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, The Object of Beauty, The Bridge, The Princess and the Goblin, Once Upon a Crime. He played Hans in The Mighty Ducks. He was The Thief and the Cobbler. He was, oh God, that's right, he was in Nowhere to Run. Citizen X, Mad Dogs and Englishmen, not that one, the one from 1995. Surviving Picasso, Swept from the Sea, My Giant. Passion of Mind. As I'm going through K-19, The Widowmaker, God, he got to be two Russians in a version of an American submarine films. I'll Be There, played, Asylum, The Christmas Eve Snowfall, These Foolish Things, Flawless, I forgot about the Jewel Heist film. His last noted credit was from 2014, Decline of an Empire, so as well as Prisoners of the Sun. So yeah, salute to Joss Ackland, classic Hall of Fame, that guy. All right, friends, I'm really happy to be able to share with you this interview for Thanksgiving week. This is, as I referred to, one of the usual suspects of this program, one of the longtime guests of this program. Here's my Thanksgiving chat with Danny Boom. Enjoy. Friends, it is a film sociology Thanksgiving miracle and holiday tradition, I'm happy to say. And joining me on the line from somewhere mysterious, that's upstate New York, an OG, an original usual suspect of the show, master of all food trades, Emmy-nominated, internationally renowned culinary personality, husband, father, my favorite maple leaf, but his Red Wings wife is better, and he'll tell you I got him on the show because I couldn't get Nigella Lawson. It's Danny Boom. How you doing, pal?
As long as you said Nigella Lawson and not Jamie Oliver, I am way, way, way more impressed with that intro than anybody could ever be. How you doing, bud?
I'm okay.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. So wait, have you been asked for your autograph and people have thought you were Jamie Oliver?
Oh, no.
Okay, just
A,
checking.
I don't spit in people's food when I talk. And B, I'm definitely a brunette version of the Cockney Mockney. So, I've never been mistaken for him.
Okay.
The funny thing is, Jamie actually comes from 45 minutes away from where I actually live, but came from in England.
Okay.
So we always had a lot of different similarities, and that's, if it wasn't for him, I would never have got into food, and if it wasn't for him, I'd never even got into TV. So it's a mercurious world that we live in.
Okay, but it's not the Samuel L. Jackson, Lawrence Fishburne syndrome, so that's good to hear.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not that at all. But no, I've got to say, the funny thing is, it's amazing how you get into the things you do because of people that mimic or mirror you.
Yes.
You know? So, I mean, you're like the Howard Stern of Indianapolis.
Oh, gosh,
so
no, I'm
there
not.
You go. It's got to be like that, right?
No, I am not of anywhere of Howard's caliber. But plus, I can't do any of the stunts that he used to do back in the day. But I appreciate, hair-wise, curly, yes. I do have that going for me. So, listeners, always use conditioner. Never wear ball caps. That's all I'm saying to you, young guys out there with the golden line.
Do you use hair and mane?
Pardon?
Do you use hair and mane?
No. What is that?
That's the greatest movie quote ever from.
Oh, jeez! Is it from Shampoo?
Will Ferrell, when he did that figure skating movie.
Oh,
he had a whalebone brush.
Blades of Glory.
They all had, and he said, "Yeah, I use hair and mane," and it's like it's actual shampoo that they use on horses for his glossy coat and hair.
Look
that one up.
No, thank you. No, it's been a while since I've seen Blades of Glory. I will have to now. Of course,
Blades of Glory.
You have a hair salon in your wheelhouse in your life.
I do, yeah, because my dad, who sadly passed away 4 years ago, but they kept it going. So my dad was Vidal Sassoon's fourth apprentice in London. And my dad went off to be his own man and developed his own chain of hair salons. And then to this day, there's one salon left, and that's in my hometown in Peterborough in England. And my mom and my sister still run it. Yeah.
Wow.
And he was very well respected in what he did. And thank God he gave me a good head of hair at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. Would your dad agree with my advice? As far as conditioner and ball caps.
Yes, he would. He said, you're better off rubbing an egg in your hair than using Heads and Shoulders to stop dandruff. Tell everybody that. And the funny thing is now, I do. My wife actually, I sometimes catch her rubbing avocado in her scalp and coconut oil and things like that just because of his advice.
That's
kind of weird.
It
comes back to food, Matt.
No, it will. It will. It will. Food. I am also curious, what is the longest you've ever grown your hair out?
Oh.
And are there pictures?
Era. I think it was my boy band phase. 90. Yeah. Because Take That, if anybody remembers Take That or any of the British bands, we all had the 90s curtains, like hair curtains, and my hair was down to my jaw, and I remember, and this brings it to the hockey. So when I was playing hockey,
yes.
That season I walked in, and all the girls liked me, and all the older players didn't like, you know, this hot young 18-year-old coming into the dressing room with his flowing locks. So as my initiation to the team, they actually shaved my hair and threw me out the dressing room, and all these girls. I'll never forget. I mean. Where I'm from in England, Sheffield is like the Sheffield is been in the news lately for a tragic accident, but they are like the elitist club in British hockey. And the fans are unbelievable, like literally unbelievably passionate. I used to get chased down the street. It was like being in the Beatles. It was nuts. And so after a game, they shaved my head and threw me out the dressing room first. And they said they heard the screams, and they just laughed. They just couldn't stop laughing because all these girls were like, "Oh, his hair! What happened? What happened?"
So then you joined Madness.
There we go.
Yeah.
It was maddening and funny at the same time.
All right. So Thanksgiving is coming up. What is the menu prepared?
Yes. Actually, we have Meg, my wife, because she's a planner. I'm a doer. I'm just like, let's just do it. And she's like, no. So for 2 weeks, we've been planning this menu for three children and me and her. So I don't know. I don't know what that says about the dichotomy of our family, but the menu is we're going to stay traditional this year.
Okay.
So we're actually doing crown of turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the amazing thing that I saw this year that is a big trend in food is people are ditching the turkey and they're doing duck and goose for Thanksgiving this year. I'm seeing that's a big a big trend that a lot of people are buying in supermarkets.
Mm-hmm.
And also, obviously, because of the economics structure that we are, the turkey industry have done an amazing thing. They've actually, like, there is way more. So if you don't know what a crown of turkey is, it's basically just the breast area. They chop off the arms, the legs.
Right.
And you just get the breast. So that is a big thing that I'm seeing in the supermarkets right now. And also then a pre-butchered turkey. So it's the whole turkey, but no bones in a bag.
I've heard about these.
It's been molded.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool because at one point you don't have, it's cutting down on the cooking time and you get all the best bits that you need. So it's a little bit more affordable. So you're not paying $40 to $50 for a 10 to 12, I think if I'm right, and I'm going to say up here in New York, a 12 to 14 pound turkey is between $45 and $50.
Oof.
So cutting back on the weight, you cut back on the dollars. So that's another big point there.
And you don't have to get up at like 3 a.m. to throw it in for by the time.
I don't know. I've never had to do that. And I think it's like an American fable where you got this massive turkey.
Yeah.
All these massive expectations. So
right.
I think what we'll learn, I've been in the country now for 20 years and I've seen turkeys get smaller because people now understand I only need enough. I don't need all those leftovers to last me a whole week. I just need enough for the day.
Sure.
And I think it's becoming like people being more efficient with their time and their money. Because then Christmas is just around the corner and it's another celebration, right?
Yep.
So there's that. And I've only this will amaze you. So I've got a new a job. I'm actually working for the state of New York. I've started a program to teach young offenders how to become look after themselves and actually become skilled workers in work development.
Very good.
So one of our projects, we had a church network, and they said, "Listen, we're going to do a fundraiser. We've got 40 turkeys. Could you just do 40 turkeys in the next 24 hours and, have them ready for us?"
Wow.
And I'm like, what? They said, yeah, you could do that, can't you? And I was like, okay. And we did. I did 40 turkeys in 24 hours.
Holy cow.
And they were all 14-pound turkeys. So you can do the math on the time element.
Yep.
But we were rotating 6 turkeys at a time every 4 hours. And it actually just made me realize it's like, well, this isn't such a bad job. What gives everybody the anxiety is how do I prepare the turkey, put it in the oven, and then I've got my major heat source, because most people only have one oven, not fancy like me, who's got two ovens, that you've got, I've taken my major heat source out, and that's going to make everything hot,
yep.
And everybody agitated because I've got to wait for that before I can put in my mac and cheese and my stuffing and everything else into the oven. So it's just a time management thing. And the biggest thing is, I always say at this time of year, delegate, have fun, and just take the pressure off yourself.
Yes.
That's my big thing with the turkey.
Now, going back a little bit, you mentioned geese and duck. I've always been intimidated by those, one, because of the price, and two, I think that, you know, I got over the turkey hump. That wasn't a problem. But I think the size of it and you know, is that a myth? Am I just getting into my own head?
Well, I'm gonna blame Garth Griswold of building that up.
Wow.
Because, like, your size of your turkey is so. If I'm correct, because I'm speaking off the cuff, you're gonna have it's a pound 1 pound per hour is your cooking time,
mm-hmm.
and then a pound and a half, per hour. But the other side of it is how much turkey do you need for 10 people?
Right.
So they used to say a pound of turkey per person. And I'm like, well, really? Is that, are you all going to eat a pound of turkey? And the frame of the turkey is the weight area, right?
Yeah.
Just like crab. You bigger the crab doesn't mean the most meat, and neither does it sometimes with a turkey. The bigger the turkey just sometimes meant the frame of it was big. But that's why you look at the poundage, because that's where you've got to look at the breast and the legs. So, to get to the point of the size of the turkey, if you have got 8 to 10 people coming over for dinner, you're only going to need a 10 to 12 pound turkey. If you've got anything more than that, then just go up by 2 pounds every time.
Okay.
And that's my basically rule of thumb. And I have never not made a turkey and had leftovers. And the largest turkey I've ever cooked was 24 pounds.
Oof.
So.
Yikes. How are you on injectable marinades?
So this is where I think we've talked about this before. And if anybody remembers my little spot here before, I've always said that the first thing about marinades and basting turkey is it starts with the cavity and filling that cavity with fruit.
Yep.
Because if you want a nice, moist and hydrated turkey, I honestly don't believe it's about what you inject. It's about what you prepare your turkey and how you cook it. So I love stuffing the cavity area. And don't forget to take out the plastic bag with all the giblets in it. That's the first thing. Empty that. Put it in the bottom of your tray.
Yep.
Or your baking tray. Do not forget to put carrot, celery, and onion underneath there. And remember, that's the base of your sauce and your gravy that you're going to create. So that don't forget that. The next bit is when you go into the cavity, take a grapefruit, a navel orange, some apples, even some pears, and fill the cavity with the fruit. And then what that'll actually do is actually open your bird up. I'm not a big trusser. I don't really believe in trussing a chicken or a turkey, because I want even cooking mm-hmm. all the way through. Some people say, well, if you truss it, it does cook it evenly. But with something so dense like a turkey, I'm going for speed cooking at the end of the day. I want it done, and I don't want any chance of any pink or anything not getting cooked all the way through. So I always don't trust my legs. That means tie the legs together. And then I actually baste under the skin with butter. I may even slip a little clove of garlic into the skin as well, or into the flesh. I find that it's really good. And then I take my big tip I give everybody is you take butter, olive oil, and some chicken stock cubes, crush those down into a powder, mix it all together, and then you baste your turkey with that. Once you've got a good, I mean, I use probably, what would you do? On a 14 to 24 pound turkey, I'd probably use about 3 sticks of butter by sticking it under the skin and over the skin.
Oh, yes.
And then, to be honest, I've never found that I've had to do this injection marinade or or even basting. One of the chefs I'm working with when I did the 40 turkeys, he's like, "Well, you're not going to baste them." I said, "Well, what do you need to baste them for? There's so much natural juice inside that turkey. It's only when it sits for a long period of time because of the residual heat. That's why we take the turkey out and it sits covered in foil for up to an hour before we carve it. It's resting, and this is the thing of people go, well, it's going to get dry. Probably back in the day it did, mm-hmm. but right now you've got gravy, you've got the butter in there, you've got the natural juices, you've steamed. And the other reason why I'm going to answer the question, because I didn't really answer it when I was explaining it.
That's okay.
Is why you put all that fruit in the cavity is to create a massive steam bath.
Yep.
So obviously all those natural oils and sugars and the water, the moisture from the fruit creates like a sauna inside that cavity, and all that moisture permeates into the skin, keeping it beautiful and moist.
Correct. How are you on frying?
Did that answer your question?
It did. No, it did. It did. It. I did. So you're saying you cram it basically is your tip there. No, I get it. I understand that. I have a turkey cannon. So where you a pipe, and I know this isn't the best description of it, but it's wired with this kind of metal pipe. So you stick the bird on the pipe so you get an even cook, especially with the bottom. But you take in it, but in the pipe you put in either apple cider or red wine or white wine or some that sort of thing, and that permeates it.
Well,
so
I've
that's
never
been
come
my
across that. That's
yeah.
But it's one of those
yeah. items you only use it when you're putting a bird cavity onto said pipe. So I mean it goes either way. Have you ever deep fried a bird?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Have you ever deep fried a turkey?
Oh, that's on my absolute bucket list. I've got a crazy brother-in-law who's
he's the one who does it.
Who loves doing that? Like he's my brother-in-law Paul. He has got every smoker ever made, but he's also really into like deep frying turkeys and things like that. And I've never made it to his house for Thanksgiving in 10 years, and it's kind of crazy that it's the one thing I'd love to try, but I'm not. I think I'm a little bit of a literally a thought. Excuse the foul pun here. I'm a little bit of a chicken to do it.
Yes. So no, same here, because the oil is expensive, and if you go on YouTube, friends, you can see enough fails that I would get what I like to call around my house sitcom wife look, and I think you would probably get the same.
Yes.
And so if it's even better if you have a friend or a relative who will do it for you. I've had it and it's amazing, but I don't think I can pull that off. And I know there have been gentlemen on TV food television who've shown you pulleys and things that look like something out of a Vincent Price horror movie to drop the bird in safely. I was like, I don't have the skills or the wherewithal to do that.
No. You know, you always find it's the most cavalier relative or friend that would do it.
Yes. I believe to make a joke about a certain location of the southern United States, it's the, you know, what's the last thing they say before they die? Hey, y'all, watch this.
Hold my beer.
Yes, exactly. Hold my beer. So, all right, with your lovely family. By the way, has Megan accepted the job as the offensive coordinator for the Bills yet?
That's the best question ever, because we were just talking about that this morning. I'm a bit of Bills oblivious because for the folks at home, I live up in Rochester, New York, which is about an hour away from the Buffalo Bills, and this is big Bills country. And
yes.
What happened this week? My wife actually was a diehard Detroit Lions fan.
I know.
Forever, because he was born in Detroit. And the strange thing is, we've been living in we've been living up here in Rochester for nearly 10 years now. And the crazy thing is, last year my middle son Theo turns around and goes, like, he just turned Bills mania, like, he was just, everything was red, white, and blue, and Josh Allen.
Okay.
And and then all of a sudden my wife jumps on the bandwagon. I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You're like, she goes, well, look, I'm still going to be a Red Wings fan, but I've got to switch allegiances. I've got to do something that's local. I said, okay, so you do that. That's your thing. And so this morning we were literally just talking about that because she's like, you know, I think they waited two games too late. That guy, he should have been gone. And she goes, you know, this is what he should have done. And then she went into the whole thing. And sometimes don't you look at your wife or your partner in life and go, how did you consume so much information about something in such a little period of time?
Oh, yeah.
Every player's name, number, position. Like, oh, my God. And, yeah, so I think she's ready for the job. She would be brilliant at it.
It's good.
Fantastic on the sidelines.
Yes, with a clip. I see her throwing clipboards and headphones and all that stuff. So,
oh yeah,
And also because anytime I bring up the Lions, she brings up the Bills. So I adore you, Megan. Keep it up. But you know, I've lived in this state for over two decades, and I still haven't changed my affiliations. But that's just right. Me because I'm a threshold for punishment. Except for the Lions, right now are doing okay this year. So
yeah,
far.
Exactly.
So far.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So what movies have you been watching?
Well, I'm glad you... Yeah, I just talked about for the show this last week, I actually saw the film Thanksgiving.
Oh, right on.
So
that's a scary one, right?
Yes. This is based on... it was back in the early aughts that there was a three-hour epic called Grindhouse. And these were two short films, a double feature by Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, Planet Terror and Death Proof. Now, they made these films, and then before Planet Terror and then in between the features, some noted filmmakers made fake trailers. Robert Rodriguez made Machete, and he's made two films of that. There were a few others in between, and one of them was Thanksgiving, done by Eli Roth, the man who gave us the Hostel films. Well, he's now made a full-length film based on the trailer. And, man, if you're a horror buff in any way, shape, or form, go see it. It works. It hits that tone of the calendar slasher movies of the late 70s, early 80s. You know, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Happy Birthday to Me. There's also a group of high school kids who are trying to figure it out. So there's a little bit of I Know What You Did Last Summer and everyone's favorite title, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. It's brutal at times, but it has the right tone of that era that we used to, you know, I'm slightly older than you are, but, you know, that era of a rowdy night at the theater with a bunch of kids. And if there's one horror film you're going to watch in the season, this is the one.
I'm actually literally, it's so funny that we're talking because I am fresh from the theater.
What'd you see?
And I saw a bunch of previews. I went to see, because it's, me and the kids went to see the new the new Trolls movie. I know it's pretty big from the horror genre, but while I was there, I got to see a couple of previews and Napoleon, Saltburn, and the new Emma Stone movie, which I can't remember.
Oh, yes, from the director of The Lobster. Yes, so there's three date nights right there.
Those three movies look absolute awesomeness for adults. But Wonka even looks more amazing for the family. I got to say, I'm all in on that one.
Have your kids seen any of the Wonka films yet?
We've watched. Actually, the funny thing is, the guys were really, really, really into the original Willy Wonka movie.
Okay.
And then one day we were flicking through Amazon Prime, and we found Willy Wonka by Tom and Jerry. So Tom and Jerry did a parody movie of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they thought that was amazing. Hmm. And then from that, we went to show them the Johnny Depp one. Timber. And they went, nah, not as good as the original.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, these kids are deep. They are my children. I love it.
What are their ages?
They are now 10, 7, and 4.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've been doing this a long time right now.
Yes, you have. Yeah, well, hey, try having 122. So,
Yeah.
So because then that eliminates my other question, because I remember they were at one point the kids were really, really in the Peppa Pig. I wondered if they had, but I think they were too old for the Bluey craze.
I'm sorry. Did you say that again?
Bluey. Maybe your youngest would probably watch that. This is the Australian cartoon show.
Oh, Bluey. Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Bluey. Yeah, yeah. So we've been through the Bluey stage. We've been through the Peppa Pig stage, and then for some reason, I don't know what happened, but we blinked, and now we're into Five Nights at Freddy's. And if you're a game, if your kids are into gaming, like Five Nights at Freddy's is. It's what they call a jump scare.
Yes.
And we've had, and the big thing is, and this is, and I know we're talking movies, but the big thing that I've noticed in my industry is before the writer's strike, before the actor's strike, that YouTube was making big moves into long form programming. And so for those who just know me as a chef, I'm also a TV producer and or a producer, a creator. And we've been monitoring YouTube for a long time because what I think you're going to find in the next 18 months or so is that the actual studios will get bypassed by independents going directly to YouTube and putting their movies and shows directly on there, because there's so many young creators out there right now, like Shiloh and Brothers is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Where they recreate video games into real life, or comics into real life, or Pokemon into real life, and they take the framework of the story and then make it reality, but then they also make it into 20 minutes of quick digestible, non-interrupted via commercials. And I've got to say, my kids have watched every single one of their videos, and they get so many views that you can now see that this Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer way of fast concept filming is going to actually, I think, going to take over YouTube after this strike.
Oh, wow.
And that's where, like, when you look at the kids, they're the ones who dictate what pop culture is going to be doing in the next 10 years. And it's very interesting how these creators are also picking up on what is that they're sort of like what's the word? They're forecasting, so they know the Five Nights at Freddy's movie is coming out. But 3-4 months ago, they released the Five Nights at Freddy's show that they did on YouTube,
okay.
and they made 6 of those. And out of the 6 of them, they've got more views than the movie ever got in its first week of opening. And it's incredible.
Wow.
So you got to watch out for that, Matt.
You
may not be going to your local theater soon. You might be watching all your new movies and a high concept value on YouTube.
Well, then will you tell the influencers that to bring back the $30 to $40 million budgeted movie just so we can have something in the center, please? Just a little bit?
The funny thing is, I think everybody realizes don't actually have to make people are going for authenticity. So, like, obviously Napoleon's a different kettle of fish, or
yes.
Those high budget movies, but people really want authenticity and something to relate to. And I you know, the amount of you know, we have meetings, a lot of advertising execs and stuff, and they pick up on that, but they're always a little step behind, and then they're trying to get on the creators. I mean, I don't want to call them influencers. They're actually creators, like musicians or artists.
Yes.
Like YouTube, the YouTube content world is really more of a creator than an influencer. And they are really, really showing that let's just take out the middleman. Let's just do it ourselves, and we'll make more money in advertising today on this. It may take a little longer. I won't get the check immediately, but it's going to give me a slow burn regular income of up to anything from 150 grand a year to 2.5 to 6.5 million a year, just by making a video that you're going to get 65 million views on. And it's pick your genre, and someone's going to be there for you to pick it up.
Well, I will step back on my snark just a little bit.
I don't want to get away from the
no.
What you're saying, though. The kids are really everything that we tie back into is what do they want? What are they consuming?
Yep.
And it's kind of funny that those shows, when you go to Netflix or you go to Amazon or you go to any of the streaming apps, they all have very, it seems like they've tapped it back into European content as well. Like the Korea and Germany are really putting out a lot of great kids shows,
mm-hmm.
and Britain is putting out a lot of good kids shows. And the I don't know if you ever heard about Stephen Maggie, but this guy he was another guy that I cannot believe was one of the biggest kids shows ever on a streaming platform, but nobody knew him in Britain.
Hmm.
Nobody. And he had like 150 million views just on Amazon. And his shows, like we got really into the whole series of Steve and Maggie, and Maggie was a puppet magpie, and they did all these great songs and things like that. And it was like no one knew him. And it's just incredible how content is these days, where we're all consuming, and it means a lot to us, but to other people, oblivious to it. It's incredible.
Man, wow. What did they think of the Trolls movie?
Well, Novalee actually said it was the worst of the genre for 4 years old. I thought that was a very scathing criticism.
Wow.
But the boys thought it was awesome and were dancing in the aisles. And Megan, well, it's all about boy bands. So Megan was reliving the late 90s and early millennium with the NSYNC Backstreet Boys references. And I've got to say, there's one part in the movie that everybody's got to see, and they do a minute and a half, but they manage to fit every boy band into a medley. So everybody from the Bee Gees, Boys to Men, Backstreet Boys, Take That, you name it. Anybody who's been a boy band, they were all in this medley. It was unbelievable. So it was really cool.
I'm going to send you, after this, I want to send you a piece of audio, and this is for everybody listening. There is a band, an a cappella group called Da Vinci's Notebook. And they've done a few, I mean, they're just very clever with the way they write songs and vocalize. But they do a parody of all the boy band ballads, and it's called Title of the Song. And it just breaks down the method that you do to write a ballad for a boy band. So I will send that to you. They also have a song called Internet Porn and Detachable, I can't say it. But anyway, I'll send you that a little later on. So there's your awesome. There's your boy band thing. Okay, back to the kitchen for a little bit. What does the family have to have with Thanksgiving dinner?
This is we're the scene from Friends, where the Friends, you remember Friends, and they had the Thanksgiving, and it's like, I want mashed potatoes, but I want peas in mine, and I want lumps in mine, and it, so we've been trying to get everybody onto the same page.
Mm-hmm.
What is an absolute must is obviously the turkey.
Yes.
Megan makes an amazing cranberry sauce.
Mm.
I will be doing which I like to think it's stuffing, but I do it with sausage and apples and cranberries, and it's a little bit more fruitier. The big thing that we like to play with is the sides, and we were going to talk about that earlier. So we will be, I mean, there's only five of us, so we do this in a smaller portion, but we will be having, we have to have sweet potatoes. We have to have mac and cheese. We have to have corn. But what we do with our, what we do, we take those basic things and we give them a little spritz every year. So this year we're doing green beans with toasted almonds, garlic, shallots, and lemon.
Mm.
So instead of your green bean casserole, we keep it fresh and a little al dente. Our corn is going to have a spice mix on it, like a Mexican corn. So we're going to have a little heat mm-hmm. on the corn, rub that in to the butter. And then I don't think you should really mess with sweet potato. We love to roast it. And then popovers this year, we're going to be doing big popovers because they're great for leftovers. And I love to do, for leftovers, this big thing is, take the popover, put the turkey in it, and then with the corn, make a corn puree afterwards, pour that over, and that's like
ooh,
yummy.
Ooh,
especially like with the bubbling squeak as well.
Yes, of course. Wow, that's good. That's good. And what will your cocktail of choice be?
Oh, good question. So I'm a Velvet Revolver guy, or a Godfather. I don't know if you've ever had either of those, but have you had
I have not. Are you going for one right now?
So The Godfather is amaretto bourbon and maraschino cherries crushed at the bottom of the glass, poured over ice.
Okay.
And that's my it's an all-day drink for me. That's like it's so sweet sometimes that you just have to take sips and keep going. If I'm going to recommend a wine, red wine for Thanksgiving has got to be Juggernaut Pinot Noir from Russian River in California. Amazing red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say they're my two favorites right now.
That'll work. Okay. I generally am not a sweet cocktail person. I mean, every now and then an old-fashioned is good. And for some reason, ryes are really sweet for me. So I'm trying to find different ways to have those because I tend to be just neat with my brown liquid. But I know you can do other things with it. I just have to actually try, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to say the other, I think a nice white one is what they call the Pink Carnation is a beautiful cocktail. It's a gin-based cocktail with an egg white if you want to try something different.
Okay.
So you you mix your mixture up together, and then you take an egg white, and then you shake it all up, and it gets that lovely nice froth on the top there.
Ooh,
as well.
Nice.
That's a good one.
Okay, cool. So shifting back a little bit, when did you start working with the state of New York?
It's kind of been very interesting. So this is going to be one of those stories. It feels like there's never, you know, when you have a point in your life and you've always wanted to do something, but it's never been the right time.
Yep.
So I just at the end of last year, I was contemplating on what we're going to do with our TV studio and how we were going to expand it. And I didn't want to continue in the advertising world because it's just too stressful and there's too much. What people always want is results, but they're not prepared to do the work for the results. So we found that we were doing all the work but and giving the content that they were requesting, but they weren't optimizing the content. And for some reason, we would then make it, but they would market it and they wouldn't get the results. So it was like, well, this isn't really working. We've got to try something different. And then what we also knew was there's this wave of the micro influencers. Everyone's going to turn to their phone, and anything in high production or high demand of content, like we were doing an amazing amount of content. I did in 2 years, I did around 2,000 shows. All for social media. So if you think about the pressure of that and pumping out, I was getting away from being the chef side or the food side that I really wanted to be part of. So I went to a dinner party one night and I got introduced to a guy, and he ended up being a guy that works for the state of New York. And I told him about this passion project that I had when I was with Food Network. And the idea was I wanted to go and teach either prisoners in the Department of Corrections or youth that are in rehabilitation centers to actually look after themselves, teach them how to cook, and then see how you could build those skills and create a skill set so you could actually go out and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, oh, that's funny. And then I said, he goes, you've got any examples of that? I said, do I? I said, yeah, there's this, and this is, if everybody is out there, you've got to check out the story of the Homeboy Bakery, because the Homeboy Bakery is this amazing American success story where a priest in California took the probation of a lot of gang members that are out in LA County, and he taught them to be bakers and also taught the rival gang members to work together. Then what happened after that, he opened a bakery and he actually managed to give these people jobs. And so he supported and sponsored their probation. They all had work, and then they were actually able to rebuild their lives. 25 years later, this charity now is just literally breaking down barriers and really, really, really helping the whole community of LA County, but also the Latino community, and reducing gang crime. And by giving everybody a job and a skill, and then actually being able to further that into different industries and different opportunities. So I'm like, this is what I want to build in New York, because this is my home state and this is where I've landed. And I honestly want to give back. So is there any way we could do this? And so that was on a Saturday night. By Tuesday, we had a meeting. And by the following Tuesday, we were up and running. And 3 months, this is 3 months ago. And I've been, so I literally went all in with the state of New York. And we're now building an amazing work program where we're taking young offenders and people in the Office of Corrections for Youth Justice. And we are helping them develop themselves and also develop a skill set where they'll go into a work development program. And we're also then the great thing is, because of my amazing network of partners and friends that I've built up over the last 20 years, that everybody gets the idea. So we've had a lot of interest about partnering with people to actually start apprenticeship schemes within not commercial, I wouldn't say commercial food companies, but just enough to say, listen, I've got this guy, he lives in your area, I've trained him to my standard, you know me, and you know what my standard would be. They come out with all the qualifications, everything that they're ever going to need to be a really useful part of any team, and they're going to understand that by the time they get there. So we've got a 10-year program now going, and so we're up and running, and we'll be flying high by next summer. And we've also got a CSA box going out from our farm. We're going to have products coming out from our classes about how to make sourcing and how to they're harvesting their own honey and eggs and all these amazing things that most kids from urban areas or uncared for communities really, really need to be nurtured. And the response in the last 3 months has just been unbelievable, Matt. It's been unbelievable.
That sounds amazing. Playing devil's advocate for just a moment. What if somebody says these are men and women coming out of their situation, and you're giving them a chance to work in an area where there are basically knives? How do you respond to somebody with that kind of response?
Well, funny because you sound like my mum now. Well, we have obviously a lot of training courses, mm-hmm. and these guys are learning that this is a tool. And there's lots of sharp things in a kitchen. There's lots of hot things in a kitchen, and they understand that this is an opportunity. So the guys that are on the program, the first intake, we actually start on December 1st of our. We have 4 6-week programs that they have to basically graduate from, mm-hmm. and the whole thing is about trust and rebuilding yourself, and it's a one strike and out issue. So if there's any behavioral issues on their part, they're out.
Okay.
At any time. And then when they're going in to the work environment, well, they've been trained, and the other thing is you have to build a trust with people.
Yes.
No one can ever change their path in their life if no one gives them trust. And then once you give them trust, you give them hope. And once they have hope, the responsibility is on them. And they really get it. And I'm not trying to change the world, but it's one person at a time. That's all that it can be. One case study at a time and one person's ability to understand that they've got an opportunity to remove themselves. The best slogan I came up with was with these guys is, you don't want to go back to what you've done. And also you have to understand the people that you're dealing with. And I'm going to say this is the most ununderstood element of people that are in the corrections facility. Majority of the people that are there have done something for necessity, not because it's a whim.
Right.
And I would say that a majority of the people I've met have had to do something for necessity to survive. The others, yeah, there is high violence and other issues, but they are come down to psychological issues as well. And it comes down to the fabric of the family that you've come from. It comes down to this community that you're from and what's acceptable and being held accountable. And if you're a 14-year-old that's never been held accountable, how are they ever going to learn? They have to learn to trust you, and you have to learn to trust them, and then that's where you build this relationship of like, well, now you understand that you're on a path to move forward. And it's really been a very interesting journey so far.
Congratulations, man. That's an incredible task. And I think you had mentioned it to me in past shows about the Dream Project. So I guess it's all in the timing. Congratulations.
It is. It really is. And timing is everything. And also, there's not a time in life right now where we need programs like this. Because I go to a ton of high schools and I go and visit and talk, and you have a group of people that not everybody's going to be a lawyer, a doctor, and an architect. Mm-hmm. We need skilled people. We need tradespeople. We need people to be plumbers, electricians, and chefs, and mechanical engineers. We need those people. And there's obviously BOCES programs and things, but it's all about confidence, like giving people trust and confidence in themselves. Anyone can turn. I'm not going to be rose tinted glasses here, but you can change if you're given the opportunity. And my favorite one time slogan is, if you can't change the people that you're with, change the people that you're with. And that's the core element. Keep away from the bad and work on yourself to move forward. And that's all you can do.
Very good. So where can people find out more information about the program?
We will be announcing more of those options next year, obviously, because we have a lot of this is not a social media stunt at the end of the day, Matt.
No, of course.
It's about the common good and to build communities. So those type of things will obviously come out when they're ready to come out.
Okay.
But I'm kind of happy not to be in the limelight for a change. I'm actually really happy to be in the background making stuff happen. And I think that's the more important thing. I want, one day people in your great state to know that, this idea, you might hear about it again, and it came from something that we did,
Right.
Or that it might inspire another community to take on the same responsibility for the youth of their area.
Very good. And man, that's great. I'm really excited for you, Danny. This is very, very cool.
Thank you, buddy.
So wrap around a little bit. One other film I want you to look for, because I know it, I think it's open, is The Holdovers from Alexander Payne with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, yes, because that was the same director that did the wine one, right?
Sideways, yeah, Sideways, About Schmidt,
Sideways.
Election, yeah. And this is a great example. He's a teacher at a boys' prep school, and he has to stay over Christmas break for the kids who weren't able to go home for the holidays. And, it's that thing of, random people kind of thrown together and what happens with it. So it's one of the best things I've seen so far this year. What films from your youth and what films from Megan's youth have you tried to share with the kids?
That's a really, so this is where, parenting, so did I hear your question correctly? Did you say what films would I choose and what did Megan choose to, with the kids?
Have you successfully shared with the kids?
So I've got two boys and a girl.
Yes.
And me and my daughter one day were watching, something with unicorns, rainbows, and sparkles all over it. Gabby's Dollhouse, probably. And I go, where are the boys gone? And I walk upstairs, and I'm gonna be this guy right now. You know when you're in a relationship and somebody has veto power sometimes over everything,
yeah.
That is the fun police, right?
Yes.
So if I was watching a gory movie or something like that, I'd turn it off respectfully so I don't want the kids to see that. So one day I go upstairs and the kids and Meg are in bed watching the Meg One.
Oh,
the Meg. And I'm like, excuse me, you vetoed the last thing I did with anything. Yeah, but they wanted to watch it. They pressed me into it. And I'm like, whoa. This is a veto moment. I don't think this is appropriate. And she's like, no, I have veto. They're good. This is okay. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So then the next time I go and we're watching, I wanted to watch Star Wars. And she goes, I think this is a bit violent.
Wait a minute.
Hang on here. Whoa. You just let them see a man-eating shark, like, rip the world apart, and you won't let me see Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, with a lightsaber? Well, I think it's a little much. Like, so this is the veto power in the house at the moment.
I see. Wow.
If, the kids have got really good taste in movies. as we're coming into Christmas, I've got to say, I was so impressed. They even made, Remy, my oldest, even made a movie list of things we must watch.
Uh-oh.
And he queued them all up. We've got Home Alone 1 and 2. We've got Elf. We've got Elf. And then Grinch, the Illumination version, is absolute must. And
okay.
They're the movies that they will be locking up for us. And then if I'm awake by 9 o'clock, I will probably try and find something that's out there.
Okay. You haven't shown them Goon yet, right?
No. Oh, but I did, because so my middle son, Theo, he's just got into hockey.
Uh-oh.
And I started trying to show him Slapshot.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
boy.
And I got vetoed again.
Yes.
I was like,
yes.
This is fun.
But, all right.
You know,
so,
I mean, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but the worst thing I ever did through COVID was show my kids the Three Stooges, because the next day it was like WWF Royal Rumble in the bloody living room. There was a chair that came across. There was fingers in the eyes, and it was like, and I'm like, I shouldn't have done that. And now I'm thinking I shouldn't have started with Slapshot.
Wow.
But, you know,
so
Mighty Ducks would be the next one.
Yeah, you start there. Years ago, I got to interview one of the Hanson brothers, and which was a lot of fun. And they made an appearance. We have it was then the Indianapolis Ice. Now we have the Indy Fuel. And so they came out for the signing. And my kid, M, was, I want to say, about 7 or 8. And, you know, they went with me, but I had them share the story. We get up and I introduced my kid, and my kid says to the Hansons, "My daddy would only show me your first scene, you with the cars, putting on your foil, and your first game, and that's all he'd show me." And they all went, we understand, sweetheart. We get it. So
the first shift is the greatest film moment I've ever seen in my life.
It's motivational. Now I'm putting this out there, knowing I can get sitcom wife look from two ladies, but the very first episode of South Park I ever shared with my kid was the parody of the Mighty Ducks, because it didn't involve body parts or body waste. Just a parody of the underdog sports movie thing. And if you know, and it goes down a particularly dark path, and the end of the episode involves my team, which, by the way, I think they're both tied at the time of this recording in the NHL standing. So nice to see the team up there until they make the big drop down by the end of the year. You guys are doing well.
Well, I'm actually just watching Toronto and Detroit in Sweden right now. That's what we're doing. I've got the big. I can hear them cheering upstairs because the Leafs have just gone ahead by one goal in the game. So at least we're all good on that.
So anyway, there you go. But yeah, good luck with Slapshot, because that's going to take a while. But it's still just as relevant today as it was almost 50 years ago. Is it a sport? Is it brutality? Is it entertainment? What is it? So there you go. Danny, I really appreciate the time. I hope you and the family have a great holiday, and we will chat again soon. But yes, congratulations on the new gig, and keep in touch.
Thank you, buddy. It is always great to connect with you, and I'm really, really happy we made it happen this year because I know we missed it last year. You got to keep it going, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving. And if you've got any questions about your turkey, you know Matt has got my number, and we can text all the way through through the holiday season.
Yeah,
so it's all good.
That's the other thing. I'm happy to say, and it's not that I don't want to talk to you. I'm happy to say I've not had to call you with a kitchen crisis in a while, but I will keep it off the bathroom wall. I appreciate it, Danny.
It's awesome. I'm always here. Always here at the other end of the phone, bud.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
I can't believe you've let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!